This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com, or live here inside the Emden studio. Sam Webb, and of course, the MGO Blog Roundtable, Brian Cook, across from me, BC. How you doing?
Hello.
Doing all right?
Yes.
Supporting UAD this morning?
Yes.
There you go. Craig Ross.
Yes.
Craig, you know, someone said, I mean, I didn't mention this last week, John Teske, he is doing his damnedest to make Craig Ross look
right. I
think
you did mention that last week.
So the guy, did we mention that?
No, we should mention it again.
He is doing his damnedest to make Craig Ross right when he says this is the best big man in the history of Michigan basketball. For a half, he was on pace to...
Yeah, but that wasn't even this game.
I didn't mention it last week, so I was throwing Craig a bone. Craig Ross, how you doing this morning?
Well, you're throwing, not me, you're throwing John Teske a bone.
No, it's definitely you.
Oh. Definitely
you. Yeah, definitely you.
All right.
That's because Terry Mills doesn't call in again.
He will. He will call in and growl at me, but that's okay.
Can I speak to Craig Ross?
That was the best. Ed Fang, how you doing this morning?
I'm great, Sam. How are you?
Doing great. Tell folks about the Power Rank.
Power Rank's my site for better football and March Madness predictions through analytics.
All right, so we'll definitely come back around to the basketball discussion. I just want to start off asking guys, what the hell has happened to Michigan State?
Well, they are really injured, so they've lost four offensive linemen. They started two true freshmen at guard and center in the last game. They've lost Stewart. They've got six guys in the transfer portal. so their offense is pretty banged up. And then they did the Brady Hoke deck tears on the Titanic thing where they didn't fire anybody and just rotated a bunch of guys on offense. Didn't do anything. And
come on, man. Their offense is significantly better than last year.
It is?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It's significantly better than last year. Lewerke's healthy. He can actually make throws.
Yeah. But if you're saying that the decision not to change over any of your offensive coaches worked...
I'm not saying that.
I mean,
you got a healthy Lewerke.
Yes.
But you cannot say that the offense is as bad as last year.
I guess this is so to what end? I mean,
only the 11th worst offense in the Big Ten.
Right. Are we comparing piles of crap?
No.
They don't stink as bad, but they still stink.
Especially because you got to look at who they're picking up any yards against. It's Illinois. Have they played Rutgers yet?
I don't think so.
I think they end the season with that big rivalry matchup.
Nice. they're just in a world of hurt for a lot of different reasons.
Did you guys watch the Illinois game?
I did not. I was watching LSU Alabama, and then when I flipped I flipped to the Michigan State Illinois game, Michigan State was up 31-10.
Yeah,
Dave, I watched the end of it. But
okay. Dave Nastrnak does this weird thing where he puts five screens up. And so I was watching LSU and the Michigan State game, and then I taped Michigan State and looked at it. And the interesting thing is Michigan State actually played a really good game. It's hard to say this, but they completely dominated that game. I mean, they have some good players. Cody White is a very fine offensive player. And Lewerke played pretty well. Their offensive line created tons of space for Collins, and Collins is a completely decent running back. And it's 28-3, and then it's 31-10, and it's only 31-10 because they make this completely bonehead decision on a Hail Mary at halftime where they single cover the Illinois NFL
linebacker.
Yeah, they single cover him for some reason on the last play of the half.
Well, and they also single covered him on 4th and 16. Yeah. And Matt Millen is like, all right, well, they got to drop a guy to bracket Imhotor Bebe. And I'm like, yeah, that's right, Matt Millen. And then they just don't.
They don't. Yeah, and so it was like this incredible series of bizarre coaching decisions.
Oh, it was Spartino to the max.
Yeah, but Michigan State, truly, I mean, they must have gained 500 yards in that game.
They did. You got to consider the fact, though, that Illinois had
it's
two.
It's terrible, I know.
They're terrible, and they had two of their starting linebackers ejected in early going.
Yeah, one guy threw a punch, and they pitched him in, like, the second play of the game, I think.
Which is like, how are you throwing a punch on the second play of the game?
Right.
What happened on the first dang play of the game that made you that angry?
It got you so worked up, yeah.
Yeah. Then they just, I mean, they're a team that does not have the depth requisite to be like, all right, we're going to put in our backup linebackers.
Especially with Joe Bocci out. Right.
Well, that was Illinois.
That was Illinois.
Oh, Illinois.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Now Bocci was out, and the guy they had was.
I mean,
okay.
Illinois starting linebackers are terrible. So like their backup.
Hey, isn't Daley Harding one of their?
Daley Harding is their best.
Daley Harding is their best guy.
He's the best guy.
And but he's got two other guys next to him that are just they just sit there and they're like, should I tackle this guy? Is that what are the rules here? Is that legal?
Yeah.
So that's Illinois.
It's such a strange game.
I will say this. After they beat Wisconsin, Brandon Peters said, we're going 8-4. No way. But they're still
in contention for the West, right?
I thought going to East Lansing and beating Michigan State was just a pipe dream.
Yeah.
So far, he's right. It's still possible. They got to beat Iowa.
Yeah, they got to beat Iowa, but they also got, like, Northwestern on the schedule, right?
So they'll beat Northwestern, right.
So. Speaking of Northwestern, good thing we didn't hire Ed Cooley.
Man, I tell you what, the worst transfer maybe in the country. Is there one that worked out worse than the Hunter Johnson transfer?
Yeah. I was talking about basketball because they lost to Providence. I mean, they beat Providence.
I thought you were talking about football.
No, they beat Providence last night after losing to Merrimack, who's in their first year in D1.
I thought they lost a monitor.
Never mind. There we go. We got a Civil War joke, everybody. that's very on brand.
But anyway, definitely on brand.
Yeah, I don't know what Providence. I mean, what did Providence return this year? Not that you should lose
Alpha
anyway.
Diallo.
So I'm not aware of.
I mean,
of Providence's team this year.
Anyway, back to Michigan State. They did have a good offensive performance against Illinois, in part because they were running Michigan's arc or bluff read, and which they must have been practicing all year, and they didn't actually run it until this year.
Saved it for Illinois.
And Lewerke rips off 100 rushing yards.
You know, I think Lewerke.
How little brother is that?
I think Lewerke was hurt on the key interception, too. He seemed to take a headshot.
Yeah. And he missed this whole like conversation. They pulled the Brady Hoke here. So in the press conference after the game,
they had different stories.
Yeah, they did.
So
that hasn't been talked about that much.
No, D'Antonio's like, we didn't check him; he was fine. And then someone,
the medical staff was like, no, we checked him and we cleared him.
So it's literally the same thing that happened. The only difference is that the Shane Morris visuals were a lot worse. So, like, you know, Shane Morris is stumbling around,
yeah.
and when Lewerke gets up after a pretty long pause, he doesn't.
Well, Lewerke said, my bell was rung, and I was, you know, for a minute.
Do you think that means not a concussion? That's an idiom for concussion, anyway.
That is not something that has been covered widely. I think that's the part about being Michigan State that they don't like being, you know, kind of the second class citizen, but this is one of the times where
they want to be the second class citizen because
no one's talking about your head coach saying he got banged up. We looked at him. I looked at him, and he was fine. So I threw him back out there. And then the medical staff was like, "Hold up, wait a minute. the coaches don't clear players to go back in the game. We checked him, and we cleared him, and we put him back in the game."
And I feel like the person that's lying there, because I mean, we saw what happened, right? Like, they didn't take him out for one play. I doubt they checked him at all. And so now it's just like, all right,
he's certainly going to play this week.
They're not going to put Rocky Lump.
Yeah, Lewerke did a lot of good things in the Illinois game. Did some bad things, but you know, he did a lot well.
I mean, that's been his MO for a lot of his career. Yeah. And when he comes up against better defenses, they just
we know the loss of Joe Bocci is titanic for them. But
speaking of rearranging deck chairs, right?
But in addition to that, though, this is a team that even with Joe Bocci in there, my question about them was in the secondary, would they be as good?
Yeah.
You know, Justin Lane going to the NFL was a huge loss. Justin Lane, if he comes back, maybe is a first round draft pick. But without him, you know, can you play the way that you've played in the years where you had Trey Waynes and Darquez Dennard, that kind of defense that puts a lot of pressure on your corners? Well, Michigan State doesn't have corners like that this year.
They don't. So it's been a struggle for them. I mean, the Imhotur Bebe outing where he has four catches for 160 yards is indicative. I mean, they've taken a major step back on defense, and they returned virtually their whole front sevens. It goes back to the fact that, I mean, this is just the cusp of what's going to happen to them. Because if you look at their recruiting over the past few years, not good. And this year especially is a complete crater. So, I mean, they're going to lose three of their four guys on their defensive line this year. They're going to lose Lewerke. They don't have guys to plug in to replace those guys.
Yeah, you pointed out in this week in one of your articles, Brian, that the entire 2016 class for them, which was a good
class, their high watermark class,
has cratered completely. They may have four or five guys of consequence left.
Lane
is
the only highly rated guy who actually got out of that university alive. Like, everybody else got nailed for sexual assault or.
Yeah, you know, I made a comment, and it was a truthful comment, but it was also made in passing when we were talking about the recruitment of KJ Hamler. And Ira, you remember I said, well, hey, you know, he went up there and didn't really see the fit, didn't really feel like he fit in with the crew up there. He actually said that on the record.
Yeah, he told the announced crew for the Penn State Michigan State game that he didn't go to Michigan State because people were going their way.
Yeah, I couldn't believe he said it publicly.
I didn't hear that. That's
amazing.
Yeah,
he did.
It was you don't hear that kind of stuff. And you know, credit to Michigan State for at least taking their comeuppance in a spectacular fashion, because they've deserved this for years. Like Winston getting out of prison and going directly to the practice field after breaking a guy's jaw. They had. McGarrett Kings get a super drunk DUI and then go kick a cop car, didn't miss a snap. Like, there have been a half dozen incidents in their past where they make it clear that they just don't care.
Well, they had the
Rather Hall ski mask thing. If you are out of prison, you can play for Michigan State. And, you know, finally, it seems like recruits are like, I don't want to go there because then I become Malik McDowell.
Yeah.
Start out as Malik McDowell.
I won't get too deep into that one. I'll just say that everything that people around him feared has kind of come to fruition.
Yeah.
With Malik.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
if you
have a kid who has a shot, but he has some troubles, Michigan State is the last place in the world you want to send him, because they just don't care. They don't care about your character at all.
I can't offer
silence.
I mean, look, what can you say? Yeah. What can you say?
They prove it. They prove it every year.
Yeah. Next question.
Hey, it's still going to be a tough game Saturday. I hope Michigan's not talking about this in the locker room.
You know, I'm
yeah, they're probably talking about Clint Winston in the locker room.
I'm with you.
they aren't. Come on.
This is sports talk radio right
exactly,
there.
Exactly. This is what we talk about has absolutely no bearing, no impact on the game. Zero. You know, anything.
Maybe not the three of us, about you, Sam.
No, nothing. You. Nothing I say has any bearing on that game. Zero.
Until your words end up on the wall at their building.
Zilch. Zilch. We have no. What I say, you know, the skin we have in the game is the talk that we're willing to put on the line before it, but that doesn't affect the outcome. Yep. I mean, it's not like, oh, we say something and we're going to make Michigan State play harder, or and it just doesn't work that way.
They're going to show up Saturday.
I agree. This is, you know, the irony of it, in my opinion, is I think the game is even more important for them because of how this season
is
going.
This is their Super Bowl to some extent. And the
to every extent.
Well, yeah. And, you know, did you see the D'Antonio press conference this week? It was quite odd. Usually, you know, he's all, what to say, cranky and
grumpy.
And his own sort of weird D'Antonio way. This week he couldn't say enough good about Jim Harbaugh.
Hey, so
no
Ira,
laying in the weeds. No,
I hear you. But Ira, I mean, take us into the passage from overtime, where you think maybe he's trying to. I don't know that it's that much of a concerted effort to kind of ease some kind of frayed feelings. But there's a personal aspect to this.
When it was the snap game, the fumble, the punt game, we all remember that one. And after the game was over and Sarah Harbaugh was leaving the box, Michigan State coaches got in her face and talked smack to Sarah Harbaugh after the game.
Smart.
And needless to say, Jim has not forgotten.
That's smart.
Classy move, talking smack to the wife of a coach.
And I'm just saying,
Jimmy's going to throw it deep to cover
that,
this 13
what that
and a half
means
points,
to me
right?
is if there's a scenario like Lloyd faced in in 2002. I know you got you remember it vivid. Lloyd was not the kind of guy that's going to run it up. You know that right. about him.
No, no, no.
But he did not like Bobby Williams.
Yeah.
He did not like Bobby Williams. I don't know if he still doesn't like Bobby Williams, but I know he didn't like Bobby Williams then. And when he had a chance to run it up on Bobby Williams, he ran it up. So I think if that opportunity presents itself on Saturday, I'm not guaranteeing you're saying that it will, but yeah, I think that definitely 2002 will be channeled by the Michigan Wolverines if the opportunity presents itself.
You know, we're talking about a team that's failed to gain 300 yards against Penn State, Wisconsin, or Ohio. And that's, you know, Michigan does not have the offense of some of those teams, but they do have a defense that's rated statistically in the same ballpark. So what we're really talking about is, like, can Michigan State scratch out 14? And, I mean, possibly. So it's just about, like, can Michigan run the ball a little bit? Can they not turn the ball over?
There you go. Can they run the ball?
I mean, a little bit. They don't have to, like, they don't have to go up and down the field. But one thing that we've seen is we've seen Michigan's ground game get more and more diverse as the season has gone along. Right. You know, I think they're going to have some stuff that Michigan State is not prepared for, especially because they're coming off a bye.
And to something, I think that's something that would really appeal to you and to a lot of Michigan fans. I wonder if you know, you watch the Illinois game, you say, you know what? We have got to dial up some more shots.
You
got to dial up some more shots in this game.
I mean, this is a team that plays quarters a lot, so those safeties are not going to be over the top of Nico Collins. And I mean, we saw what Imat Orbebe was able to do. You got to toss it to Collins three or four times, and then do that again in the second
How about
quarter.
Eight, nine, ten.
I said again in the second quarter.
Oh, got it. Gotcha.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch. I sense, you know, the nervousness that Michigan fans have about this game is less about this particular team and more about history.
Yeah.
You see in this game, even when you have a Michigan State team that's seemingly overmatched, it winds up being.
Well, I mean, last year it's 7-7 deep into the third quarter until the Peoples-Jones touchdown, and it just felt like, I mean, Michigan was dominating that game, but I bet every Michigan fan was like, all right, how are we going to, is it pick six?
How are we going to lose? How are we going to screw this one up?
Scoop a score? Yeah. What's happening
well,
now?
Well, I mean, they started out that game really well, and then they had about three or four drives before the Peoples-Jones touchdowns where they didn't look that good at all. And that's where everyone felt the dread of the season.
But, I mean, this isn't last year's defense, even despite the fact that they brought back a significant. Like, they were the number one rush defense in the country last year SP+. Plus. And this year, they're good, but they're not elite. So, I feel like you're just going to have a situation where Michigan is going to come out. They're going to be conservative. It's going to be tight for a while, but then there's going to be just a separation period. I don't know if that's the second period or the third quarter, but there's just not enough quality on this Michigan State team.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side, pick up the conversation. So really good bounce back effort by the Michigan basketball team after the near collapse against Appalachian State. You know, they get up by 30, they have to hold on at the end. They got really careless with the basketball. The guiltiest party, if you will, was Xavier Simpson.
Yeah, it was probably his worst game in a year. I mean, six turnovers, and I actually counted more when I watched the tape, but they gave him six. I don't know what was going on in that game, but he did come back and have a good game, I felt, a very good game against Creighton.
He got to the hole, he got to the rack at will, and it was the inside out, you know, sort of lane that this team is going to have to live in. It was just a different kind of inside out than the inside out that we saw in game one where they were dumping it down into the post. This was attacking them off the dribble, creating off the, you know, drive and kick, pick and roll. It was a clinic for X on the day. 9 assists he finished with.
Still a couple more, probably at least two more turnovers than you'd like to see, but still, otherwise, a really, really good game.
But, I mean, you're starting to see the evolution of what Michigan's going to be on offense. When they need a bucket, they're going to go pick and roll with Xavier and probably Teske. And the best thing that you've seen from this offense is the ball movement. They've been sharing the ball. It all starts with Xavier. We see a lot of other guys moving the ball around, getting some easy buckets, and that's a really good thing at the start of the Juwan Howard era.
Well, they are changing the offense significantly. So they're running a bunch of different sets that he's taken from the NBA, and it functions not that dissimilarly from what Beeline does, except for when they actually dump it down to the post. But just the actions, you can see that there are guys who aren't quite comfortable with them. So in the second half, one thing I noticed is that Juwan Howard was standing up and yelling at guys and pointing at places on the floor where they needed to be and were not. And so I feel like, you know, there is a transition cost both on offense and defense, because we're seeing Teske and Castleton run a lot of drop coverage on pick and rolls.
Which is different.
Which they didn't. They were a flat hedge team last year. And so just the way that you're approaching that is different, and getting in the right spacing is different. And Castleton had some struggles with that. And Teske was pretty good, but also I feel like, so they're trying to be this tempo team, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be Teske's strength.
And I got to give him credit, because fatigue was clearly a factor. You guys mentioned the drop coverage, and I admit thinking live that, you know, on one of those ball screens he didn't show on. I was like, I wonder if he's tired, but maybe it was by design, as your point is pointing out. But what cemented that thought in my head was, and it wasn't just him, he wasn't the only one guilty of getting beaten down the floor. I mean, this was a team that was getting up and down Creighton. They were running on makes and misses, and it was almost like at times they were a little surprised that they were running on made baskets. So you would lose your man in transition, and you would get good shots early in the shot clock. If it wasn't that, it was a freaking offensive rebound. But I give John Teske a lot of credit, because fatigue was a factor early, but he was fresh late. He iced the game. I mean, John Teske himself ice the game with a sequence that, you know, when his coaches put it on the screen, they're like, man, wow, dude, this is some big time
there
stuff.
There was a lot of criticism, even by some pretty smart commentators, I thought, about Teske's game, but which I found to be completely odd.
Who?
I don't want to name him.
The first half was not particularly good for him.
It wasn't, but look at how he finished the game.
But we're talking about, you know, his overall game. He was able to finish the game well, but he did give up a bunch of rebounds to a scrub who transferred from Idaho State. Right? That's not something that we saw last year, and it is something that I feel is a problem.
I agree with that completely. I mean, yes, there's some truth to what Brian says, but also I felt like it was more the space that the deep Michigan defense gave Creighton by not hedging off of the high ball screens. And when that happened, the floor opened up. Teske has to make choices now, whereas in the past he could do this like breathing. He hedged on the ball screen, and then if the guy comes around, if the ball handler comes around, well, he can carry the ball handler, and he was still good at picking up the backside. Under this defense, he ended up staring at a guy in front of him, and where the whole lane is open, or where the whole court in front of him is open, and now you got to make a choice. You know, what do you do? And as opposed to doing things that he's been doing, like breathing, and that's a whole different game. And I think that's why we got killed on the offense. Yeah, there was some not boxing out. There was some weird bounces that happened on the ball. There was some of that. But it was also some of this choice not to hedge, I think. And
if you don't like the choice not to hedge, then I think you're not going to like the deal.
Well, we'll see. It may be that it's just a work in progress,
I think it's a definitive choice not to hedge. And I agree.
They made the choice
because Teske is very good moving his feet off that hedge. We saw that all last year. It's part of the reason this team was great.
Do we know that that's going to be all they do?
They've done drop coverage every pick and roll so far.
Right.
It's possible that they're going to develop something else later in the season, because I don't want Cassius Winston getting drop coverage, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, virtually all college guards, I'm comfortable with them pulling up from anywhere inside the three-point line.
I'm not comfortable with how open some of those guys were for 15 feet.
Yeah, I don't care. If it's off the dribble and you're taking a 15-footer, I don't care.
Not if it's that wide open, because I think the equation changes that way. And the trade-off is, like, you're not going to give off a kick and a rotation for an open three, right?
Correct.
What is the balance? Yes, the mid-range jump shot is definitely the worst shot in basketball.
You know, that's why I ask.
It's different when it's wide open.
Are we convinced that this is not going to be a layered approach to what they are defensively? They're doing this first,
as they get
comfortable with this aspect of the defense, now you're adding some more pieces.
It's definitely possible, but I feel like Juwan thinks that mid-range jump shots off the dribble are not things that he's afraid of giving up. And the results in this game, they hit like two, and one of them was like a tough fadeaway that was not a part of drop coverage, but you know their percentage on them was not good.
Yeah, it'll be something that we can ask. This is Creighton.
I mean, this is one of the best shooting teams in America. So like, given the way that basketball has gone, like everybody practices three pointers, everybody practices getting to the rim,
and nobody practices the intermediate jump shot.
I mean, like, how many guys,
except for a retired Kobe,
how many guys last year in the Big Ten would you be like, all right, I'm uncomfortable giving up that shot for?
Joe Wieskamp.
Wieskamp, Isaiah Livers, Cassius Winston, that's it. Yeah. And then, you know, you get guys like David Moretti for Texas Tech, who is unbelievably good at those. Mm-hmm. And then you got to change what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's a scout, right? Like, so I think it's going to be default drop coverage. You can have that. You're not going to make enough of them.
Yeah, I was struck by how in crunch time, you mentioned that they need a basket. They're going pick and roll. That'll be a piece of what they do. They dumped it down to John Teske, in the post when they needed a bucket late in the game. And that was part of that sequence where I was talking about where they get an offensive rebound. Left-handed hook. Right. They get an offensive rebound. He pokes it away for a steal. He comes down. He posts up. And scores on a low block. They come back down. He gets a defensive rebound. They go back down. He hits a runner. They come back down on the other end. He alters a shot. I mean, it was like five straight plays, and it's John Teske icing the game for Michigan.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that was the fact that in the second half, Creighton was not able to get off early shots. So Creighton wants to get shots off in the first 10, 15 seconds of the shot clock. They were able to do that in the first half. In the second half, Michigan's defense was locked in. You know, you're not getting the same number of trips up and down the court, and so Teske isn't running himself ragged. So I think that had a lot to do with it, and then also the fact that, you know, Michigan didn't necessarily push as much in the second half.
Let's go to the phones real quick before we get to a break. Talk to Jay in Ann Arbor. Jay, what's up?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a big Teske fan. Only problem I have with this game is his physicality. He just seems as big as he is. He doesn't seem that strong. And then when you look at him, he doesn't look like he's in the weight room. I'm wondering, are they going to try to get him to start lifting, or is that just not something they want to do?
Who's not in the weight room?
Teske?
Teske. He's in the weight room.
Hitting the camp Sanderson.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's not.
I mean, I think maybe what the caller's talking about is fatigue a little bit. I think that's an interesting thing. In terms of the pace, you know, there were 65 possessions in this game estimated from the box score. That's college basketball average. I think it was 61 before the fouling.
Yeah, so in
the previous game. So it's not like there are 79 possessions.
We're talking about a game where there's like 40, it's 40 to 38 in the first half. Mm. And then Michigan, it slows. Like, there was a definite change in the pace of the game the first half. So, and I think that helped Teske.
Although, as you guys are pointing out, Teske was key at the end of the game and made big baskets both on the pick and roll and the post up at the end of the game. Yet he played 32 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like he was only playing 20 minutes in the game, but he still seemed fresh enough at the end to finish.
So, Jay, we got to get to a break. Jay, I don't mean to dismiss outright what you're talking about. I guess the strength aspect of things is never a concern with John Sanderson. He's one of the absolute best strength and conditioning coaches in the country. I think what we are highlighting, and I think maybe what you noticed in part, was, as Ed pointed out, a fatigue thing. I asked Tim McCormick about it, obviously a 7-footer himself. Mm-hmm. Said Tim on the Michigan Insider podcast, Michigan Insider basketball podcast anyway, said, what's a reasonable minutes load for John Teske? And he said 33 to 35 minutes. And I wonder, though, if they play at that pace, if they play at the pace that we saw them play at on Tuesday against Creighton, if 33 to 35 minutes is something that realistically John Teske could be expected to do.
I would say no. And Castleton did not have a good game in this game. I think he struggled against the offensive approach that Creighton brings, especially on drop coverage. So, but we've seen him play well in the first two games of the year. We've seen him play well in spurts last year. I think he's going to get better, and I think we're going to talk about, you know, a team that's confident putting him out there for 12 minutes of backup five.
Well, that's important because, you know, we are going to have a game where Teske's in foul trouble or something's going to happen where you're going to have to, and he right now looks like the backup five, so he's got to do it for us.
Yeah, to Tim's point, I do think that Teske's stamina will get better as they get more acclimated, but I still think in games like that, with a pace like that, they're going to have to be more mindful of his minutes load or managing his minutes in games where the pace is like that. We got to get to a break. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Got the MGO Blog Roundtable crew with us as we look ahead. Now, we didn't talk about some of the action around the college football world. The LSU-Alabama game lived up to the hype, man. It was a tremendous game to see Bama be down 33-13 at the break and come back. You know, speaks to how good Tua is coming off the shelf for a couple of weeks.
I wonder, had that unforced fumble on their first drive into LSU territory.
Right, it wasn't just that. You had the muffed, you know, the punter who dropped the snap. You had the interception that was wiped off the board with the 12 men on the field. It was just things that were uncharacteristic of Alabama. But do you buy that? That's a 5-point loss to SEC teams in the playoff.
I mean, who's Alabama beaten? A&M. That's it.
But and they will have beaten Auburn. If they finish one loss, they will have beaten Auburn.
Yeah, I mean they just won't have the resume. They beat Auburn.
So you think
you take a 12-1 conference champion in Oregon or Alabama
or Utah?
But Auburn beat Oregon.
Yeah, by like a point early
at Auburn.
No, it wasn't at Auburn. That was
it was a neutral site.
A neutral site game.
It was a semi-neutral.
Okay. All right.
Semi-neutral.
I mean,
Alabama's very much in danger of getting bounced out of that four spot by a team that wins a conference championship, whether that be Oklahoma, Utah, or Oregon.
Like, you got to have a compelling case if you didn't even play a conference champ to get in over a team with a better record than you, because they're going to have one more win. And I don't think Alabama's going to make that case with an over.
Do you think they will have that kind of respect for the Pac-12?
Yeah.
To put a Pac-12 champ over Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to look at like what they've accomplished over the course of the season, it's not even going to be close. Like,
I mean, you know, we saw this with Ohio State, whatever year they got in when they didn't go to the Big Ten championship game. But they had a win over Oklahoma that year, if I remember correctly. Had Alabama gone out and beaten a legit top 10 team out of conference, yeah, they would have a case.
But what if Georgia wins
the SEC?
Well, that's interesting how that game goes.
Then it's a different story, right?
Because this LSU could drop to the four if it's a close game.
Yeah.
Georgia's in, and then you probably have Ohio State and Clemson.
Yeah.
Or you know, does Georgia pull away from LSU in that championship game?
Yeah, so there are two games. Alabama's two games would be at A&M and at Auburn if they beat Auburn to get it done. And you would be saying that, hey, we did something. We beat the team that beat Oregon early in the season.
Yeah,
that would be your argument.
That would be your argument. I think it would be bad for college football if that was a winning argument.
But then you look at maybe there's no such thing as a quality loss, but you lost by 5 to the number one team in the country. I mean, that was at home, but your quarterback was coming off of an injury. He's coming out. He played, but you could say that his rust was a factor in the game, could you not?
You could, I'm not buying that. You lost. I get out of here.
It's not like I want to see two SEC teams. I'm just giving you the arguments that I think they're going to make to put two SEC teams in there.
But if the committee buys it, it's just like, do they have a compelling case over a 12-1 for champion? Big 12 or the Pac-12? No, they don't. If they had an Oklahoma win like Ohio State did that year, then they might. But they won't. They'll have one top 10 win, and A&M isn't even very good this year.
True. Yeah, I thought they were. They are not. What are they ranked now? Are they ranked at all? Are they still in the rankings?
I think they're in the tail end.
Yeah. 6-3 right now, the Aggies. Do you guys buy Minnesota? Are you buying what Minnesota is selling now?
To what extent?
Yeah. To them winning the West?
Yes. All they got to do is beat Iowa and beat Northwestern, and then the Wisconsin game at the end of the year is irrelevant. So can they beat Iowa? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Can they beat Iowa by 16 points? Yes. 27 points? Yes.
Do you think
they're not beating Iowa by 27 points. That's silly.
I think it's okay to simultaneously say that Minnesota showed us something against Penn State. I know Penn State didn't play their best game, whatever. They showed us something last weekend, but it's also okay to say that they're not legitimate contender for the playoff. probably not even going
to
win.
I think two things to me.
They're absolutely
going to
win their division.
Yeah, Tanner Morgan is a much better quarterback.
Well, your numbers are stupid.
No, his numbers are not stupid.
They think there's a 55% chance that...
They have to win at Kinnick, right?
They have to win at Kinnick.
Yeah, they're going to win at Kinnick.
They're going to be a bigger dog
some
at home.
Some good teams have lost at Kinnick, and some better teams in Iowa have lost at Kinnick.
If you see, this year's Iowa team.
And they have Northwestern.
Well, yeah, they're not counting them. They could score upwards of 10 points.
Who's a 40-point favorite this weekend? Northwestern Wildcats.
What?
They're a 40-point favorite.
Oh, who are they? Are they playing Merrimack?
Massachusetts.
Okay. Oh, they're playing. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So, at any rate, Tanner Morgan is a much better quarterback than I gave him credit for. I sort of joked a little bit about.
Tanner Morgan was 18 for 20 for 330 yards, and that was only his second best game of the year.
Right. His better game was Purdue, where he had one incompletion in that game.
Well, how did they struggle against Georgia Southern and those other meatballs they played in the first?
Well, for one. South Dakota State is a top five FCS.
All right, now forget South Dakota State. What about Georgia Southern?
Georgia Southern runs like one of these weird shotgun triple option attacks.
Okay.
And they scheduled like the three dumbest non-conference games they could schedule.
Wow. Well, I mean,
discovered a top five FCS team.
And I think a team and an understanding of a team can evolve. I don't think they knew Tanner Morgan would be this at the beginning of the year.
No.
I mean, I watched the Fresno State game, and Tanner Morgan, while they won it, Tanner Morgan didn't look he didn't look like this. He's gotten better as the season's
gone. Well, they've got three good running backs, and they have an RPO system that works really well with their offense, and their two outside receivers are probably the best
legit
in college football.
Yeah. You could put them in the conversation with the best.
You could, yeah. I mean, Alabama, LSU,
USC.
Up there.
You take their receiving core over Michigan's receiving core?
I mean, given what they've been able to do so far this year, you're talking about, like, am I envisioning this Nico Collins or Nico Collins with 100 targets already? so it's tough.
You put Michigan's receivers.
You put their crew. I hear where you're coming from, and I agree. I don't know that I'll call them the best, but I put them in the conversation with the best groups for
sure. I mean, they've made more spectacular catches than anyone else in the country. Rashad Bateman alone has like six circus catches. Like, that guy can fly. So, you know.
What if Minnesota would happen to win out?
They're in.
Like, including a Big Ten championship?
Yeah. Including Ohio State.
Yeah.
They're going to be a 21-point dog in that game.
Really?
No,
I think.
Question.
You think Paul Feinbaum's going to agree with you on that?
If they finish undefeated, there's no way you can.
Even I would have to support an undefeated Minnesota team to make the playoff.
What is your problem with PJ Fleck? I mean, just dumping on PJ Fleck.
Who was?
I'm not.
Dan. He's like, they're going to lose to Northwestern. They don't deserve to be in the playoff.
I was doing a Brian Cook joke about losing to Northwestern.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Maybe you should use some, I don't know.
Inflection in your voice.
That would be
like
good.
Like you do? Like the Brian Cook, they're going to lose to Northwestern. Is that better?
That would make it clear.
Your numbers are stupid, Ed.
If they think that there's a 55% chance that Minnesota wins a division, that's stupid.
Look, my numbers are down on Minnesota compared to other metrics, but if you think they're better than a 2-3 chance to win the division, you got to check the markets on how much they're going to be an underdog at Iowa and at home against Wisconsin.
If they're a dog at Iowa.
They're a dog at Iowa.
What? They're a dog at Iowa?
Yes, they're a 3-point dog.
All right, I got to go make some bets.
All right, folks, that'll do it. That'll do it for today's show.
This is what keeps markets fluid, right there.
The MGo Blog Roundtable is in the books for another week. We'll be back next week to recap Michigan State. Look ahead to Michigan, Indiana. Can Indiana beat Penn State?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Penix is out, so I don't know.
Yes, they can. With
no
Ramsey, they can.
No way.
No way.
They
no
can.
Way.
I didn't say they would. I said they can. Okay.